Hey y'all, welcome to the Healing Space live and online chats with Roxanne and Rhonda, the podcast where guests will share information and research on self-love, living a wellness-filled life, how to heal from traumatic events, and more. This podcast is sponsored by Healing Hearts and Minds Publishing, LLC, a new company that publishes books that promote self-love, healthy relationships, avoidance of unhealthy relationships, and much, much more. Check out their first publication, Unhealthy Relationships, Let's Stop the Madness, a guide for those in unhealthy relationships and for those who want to help them. Written by first-time author and co-host of The Healing Space Live and Online, Roxanne Elizabeth Epperson. Visit Amazon.com to purchase the paperback or ebook. Enjoy the show. Hey, y'all.
Hey.
Welcome to episode one of Healing Space Live and Online. This show brings you weekly chats with Roxanne and Rhonda on various empowerment topics that promote a healthy mindset that will lead to healing after suffering traumatic events, including domestic or sexual violence or other forms of trauma. And so we're your hosts, Roxanne and Rhonda. Today we're going to talk about... Today we're going to talk about the value of self-love, self-esteem, and self-care with R. Aldrich of the Softer Side Seminars and author of Notes from the Softer Side, and Marlise Lisi Bennett, author of Making Sense in Self-Care, Healing Beneath Layers. Now, I want you to be sure to listen to the entire show so you can enter our drawing for giveaways.
Yes.
So I'm going to turn this over to Rhonda so she can introduce our guests.
So hello, everyone. Thank you for being here. To Renee and to Marlise, it's really good to have you. And thank you to our listening audience. As always, we are so glad. So our first guest today is Renee P. Aldrich. And Renee is an award-winning writer and a published author. She wrote Notes from the Softer Side, and we're going to talk about that today for sure, and a companion book to the empowerment and motivational program she founded for women and girls, Softer Side Seminars. And here's a shameless plug. I was one of her first presenters at one of her first. Yes.
Excellent.
And she did it
thank you.
Three times.
Wow.
Excellent.
Thank you so much. Renee is currently the Chief Creative Officer for R. Aldrich Consultants, Writing, Motivation, and Project Management Consulting Company. Renee is going to share with us the value of self-love.
And self-love is good for the soul. So hi, Renee. We thank you so much for joining us today. And our first question for you is a challenge question.
Okay.
So we would like to know... we often hear people say, okay, self-esteem, here we go again, you know, always talking about self-esteem. So we would like to know if you could describe for our listeners the importance of keeping this a relevant discussion.
That is a very good question. And I'm going to give myself a little plug first. I contend that when I started Softer Side Seminars, March 23rd, 2003, not everybody was talking about self-esteem. Mm-hmm. I just don't think they were. I didn't start hearing it till over the last maybe 10 years.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
But at that time, when I created this whole love, falling in love with yourself and all of that stuff, I wasn't hearing it. But I was seeing a lot of the stuff that I think creates the reason why our self-esteem plunged. I was seeing a lot of that. A lot of angry Black women that I was dealing with on jobs, and that's just a fact. A lot of people kind of pretending, making up stories about themselves, because that's one of the chapters, one of the notes in the book. Who is that masked woman? Be yourself. A lot of people that just engage in drama and hid behind it because they didn't want to do the inside work to get their work done. So I did see a lot of that. And a lot of that was deposited in me to give out, to give. And it was because probably I was steeped in low self-esteem myself at that time. Mm-hmm. But to your to the point of your question, I just put that plug that in and say people were not talking about it.
Okay.
But then people started to talk about it because it became clear that women are challenged with how they feel about themselves. Okay. When we started Softer Side Seminars, the premise was the way you feel about yourself is the way you think everybody else does. And you will take it with you everywhere you go. You start a new job and you already feel that you're inadequate. You already feel like, they just probably hired me just because they didn't have anybody else. You don't really think you're confident. And you come in and that's the vibe that you send off. So you're snapping at people sometimes, you're snapping at the manager, your coworkers don't warm up to you and you don't warm up to them because you do not believe that you really belong there. You know, that happened to me, you know, and I couldn't think that I'm the only one. And the truth of the matter is, again, we built Softer Side Seminars around that premise that the way you feel about yourself is the vibe that you give off and you think that everybody else does. Now, in terms of relevance, there'll always be an audience for teaching low self-esteem. I believe that. It is going to stay relevant because women are still impacted by the media telling you you're not tall enough, you're not short enough, you're not light enough, you're too dark, you're not dark enough. Your hair's not long. You know you got short hair. Why are you wearing that bald head? Well, you know if you use our product, everybody will love you. Women, young girls, they get wrapped up in that. And you notice that some products are just straying away from that now. They're showing full-figured models in underwear.
Yeah.
I think that is the person who started that.
Right. You're right.
So the issue of self-esteem and learning to have a healthy sense of self is going to remain constant because the things that create it are still in existence. And everybody doesn't come from a household that empowers them. Yeah. There's a friend of mine who's a very dark-skinned woman, very pretty hair, and she told me that she got told every day when she was a little girl by her mother and father how beautiful her skin was. She said, I never struggled with my concerns about being dark. I didn't get offended because I heard it every day. Well, everybody doesn't come from that.
Right.
You know, you come from an aunt or grandmother that said, your hair sure is nappy. When are you going to do something with her hair? And you hear that and hear that. And when we're born, we come here with an empty slate. Yeah. We don't know how we feel about each other. And then people start throwing stuff on our slate. You so bad. You act just like your father. Look at your skin. Too bad you're just a nice looking girl. Too bad she's fat.
Yeah, our young girl, I hate that one.
Yeah.
So that's why there will always be an audience for it, I believe.
Hey, and that
it will always be necessary. Yes.
Thank you. That was an excellent summary to the practice as a challenge that with people, how some people may view it. That was an excellent summary of making it and letting us know it is relevant and it will remain relevant. Thank you. You're going to do the part to make sure it stays relevant, I'm sure. So I'm going to read a passage from out your book, Notes from the Softer Side. And the page I'm reading from is page 41. And it says, it is in romantic relationships where wearing the mask is often most prevalent and most dangerous. We enter into romantic relationships projecting a fake persona, then become hard-pressed to keep it up. Ultimately, generate more anxiety and stress as we become worn down attempting to keep up the facade. Oh, that is pretty heavy right there. You know, can you just talk a little bit about, can you elaborate on that passage right there? You know, wearing a facade in this relationship and
Mm-hmm. Yes, again, you know, we sometimes don't get it that we're enough. Mm. We don't see ourselves clearly. We are enough for the same reasons. So we meet someone, we get involved, but yet we still say, he probably would like me better if I could cook. Or he probably would like me better if I lost 50 pounds. And you agonize yourself trying to lose this weight. Or you take on some hobbies of his. Because, well, he's a bowler and he's really into football. And so therefore, I better pretend like I like that. I had a woman tell me, I'm telling you this, in the bathroom of my church once. She said, I've been married to him 23 years. And I've been going to that bowling alley with him at least 18 of those years, and I'm done. I never liked bowling. Wow. I never liked it.
Wow. Never.
And she said, as a matter of fact, it wore me down. Every Saturday when it came time to go, I started getting anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I know for a fact that if you don't go into something happy, healthy, and whole, and satisfied with your choices and with what you like, you're going to turn yourself into a ball of frenzy ball, trying to keep it up, trying to pretend like, yeah, I'll go to the game, or, you know, I'll have poker night here. I like cards.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe the opposite. Yeah, or maybe the opposite. You don't want to go to church, so you stop going.
Yeah, as you said, right. Ultimately, it's really hard to keep up the facade.
Yeah.
It's difficult to keep that up.
18 years was a long time.
And I knew these people for a while. And I was stunned. I said, what? He said, no, I never liked it. I just did it because he does it.
No, so I have a couple.
I'm sorry.
No, there's a healthy couple in my life, and he's a tennis fanatic. She's not. So she's not going to the court with him every day to play tennis. But when he goes to New York for the what's it called? The Open, the U.S. Open?
Yeah.
She's right there with him because that's a different thing. You know, okay, maybe my baby's going to the U.S. Open and they have a good time. She's been to see Serena play and all that kind of stuff. But she doesn't have to go play with him every day on the court. So, you know, there's that give and take there. So, yeah. Wow.
I mean, you didn't ask me this, but... one of the places this came from was an article that I read in Essence in November of 2002, November,
mm-hmm.
written by the then editor, whose name is escaping me now. But she was talking, what do you think?
About Susan Taylor back then.
Susan Taylor, yeah. She was talking about her search for a mate. She says, I had been single 20 years mm-hmm. when I finally found my soulmate. And in those 20 years, I interviewed and talked to a lot of men. This is actually mm-hmm. was the basis on Softer Side Seminars. And she said, I asked them, talked to them, and they gave me a series of things that were important to them. And one of them was, that I'll just share with you, was that have something for yourself. So that he is not your everything, your end all, your be all. Whether it's knitting, poetry, visiting the nursing homes, have something that you do that is for you, that can separate you from him in terms of activities and lifestyle. That being said, you do not have to bowl because he wants to bowl.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You do not have to do those things. Do what you need to do for you. Mm-hmm. And men, she went on to say that, you know, men appreciate and value someone who can, a standalone piece. That's what I call it.
Okay.
So that's where that thing came from.
So our next question is, do you believe you can teach someone how to increase their self-esteem, or is it more self-work?
Mm-hmm. It's a combination of both.
Okay.
Because in order to develop a healthy sense of self, what my favorite word is intentional. The first thing you have to do is get that understanding. Like if you ask yourself, why am I still with this guy? Mm-hmm. He doesn't even treat me nice.
Right.
He has other women, but I keep taking him back. Maybe you're 25 and you start to have this conversation, but you don't listen.
And
then you're 29.
Right.
You got another guy, but you keep meeting the same guy with a different name.
Right.
Right. So then you start to figure out, I've got to do something different. Mm-hmm. How do I begin? I got to do something different. I'm the common denominator here.
Exactly.
Of course, these things you don't always be ready for. You're not always ready. It's like, no, when you're ready, you will pick up moves mm-hmm. like this. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. you can learn from that, you know, and then it's an evolutionary process. I'm sure it doesn't happen overnight.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
And then you have to be willing to do the work. And then you have to be intentional. You mm-hmm. have to be intentional. It's like a carpenter sitting in front of a piece of wood saying he's going to build a bench. And the wood is sitting there. And the hammer and the nail and the bricks and whatever he needs is up in the cabinet. He's just sitting there for 2 weeks looking at this, telling everybody to come in. He's going to build a bench. Well, no, he is not being intentional. Mm-hmm. At the end of lack of action, you have nothing but empty words. Mm-hmm. So I think that it can be just developed, but you have to understand that you need it first mm-hmm. to answer that part of your question.
Right.
And then after you've hit enough curves in the road, you start to figure out, after you walk down the street and fall in the same hole over and over again, you start trying to figure out, how can I reroot myself?
Yes. Eventually, I'm going down a different street.
This is familiar.
Yeah, it is familiar.
Yeah.
So, Renee, when you opened up, you referred to African-American women and angry Black woman, which I always tend to say, we have rights, we have reasons, and we have rights. But I understand that here's what I'm really concerned about. I'm going to ask you about that. When it comes to self-esteem, what do you think with African-American women, where do we come on the spectrum? Because when it comes to obesity, high blood pressure, diabetes, breast cancer, and I can keep going on and on. Mm-hmm. African-American women always at the worst end of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious with you. What do you see? Because you opened with referencing African-American women. I would believe there are certainly women of other ethnicities with low mm-hmm. self-esteem.
Sure.
So when we're talking about African-American women specifically, though, what do you see? What have you seen in your seminars and mm-hmm. just in your work period? You've done a lot of work in nonprofit and over in the healthcare and well, not healthcare specifically, but like the nonprofit.
Health education.
Self-education. Thank you. So in doing that work and in your travels and then even in your personal life, where would you say African-American women come in on the spectrum when it comes to low self-esteem?
Well, unfortunately, we're pretty much at the high end. We're pretty much And I say that not just because, oh, we just don't like ourselves, but because from a cultural perspective, mm-hmm. we have been taught. I'll tell you, in our household, mm-hmm. many years back ago, like about 2000, my grandmother and her two sisters, who were very self-sufficient women, mm-hmm. who never worked for anybody else. They had their own businesses. They raised their children to be entrepreneurs. But in our household, for holidays and all of that, the men always ate first.
Mm.
When the table was set and we had a whole house full of people and all that, okay, the men going to eat first. They would come and have themselves. You get ingrained.
Gotcha.
That you are not necessarily first.
Wow.
And simply because you're a woman. Culturally, we've been get that. Then you have your kids and your husband and your life belongs to them. And society owns us. Society tells Black women all the time that they're too dark to wear red. That, you know, their hair should not be allowed to be natural. So that from that call, and we got that from our family. I remember the first time I came home, with an afro from DC when I went down there to work and I came home. My mother looked out the window at 11 o'clock and let me in. She said, what's wrong with your hair? She's yelling out the window at 11 o'clock at night. And that's the first thing she said.
Right.
What's wrong with your hair? So are those messages, we get those messages and they're ingrained in us more so unfortunately than the majority race, because, you know, first of all, society tells them that if you're blonde and straight hair and blue eyed or curly, you are the top of the line.
Right.
You get that. So then when it comes down to the health piece, again, everybody else's health comes before ours.
Yeah.
We're not open to talk about, you know, if we have something we don't want anybody to know, or, you know, it's whispered among the community. So therefore, we don't engage that self thing that says, I need to go see about myself so that I can be right for everybody else I love.
Yeah. Wow.
It's like, if that answers your question, that I think that's why we are kind of low on that total.
About history.
Mm-hmm. About history, yeah. Our culture. And then, of course, the regular media images stuff that tell us that's there it is.
Well, this was good. I have one final question for you, Renee, but you're not leaving, right? You will be sticking around. Thank you. So my question for you is, what inspired you to write your book?
Oh, the book.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't start the book till after I had been doing this workshops and seminars about a long time, 3 or 4.
Okay.
So yeah. Maybe 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the book is actually a compilation of all the presentations I ever did at the annual events. Each annual would have a theme.
Mm-hmm.
Like the first one of the first ones was finding your wings. Mm-hmm. Have you found your wings? Are you flying? Mm-hmm. And so the way the program would start, I would do a presentation on that. So I wrote them, you know, and I put them maybe in a PowerPoint or something. So I would say in 2014, I began to think about, I should have some kind of something to take with me when I go do these presentations.
Absolutely.
Maybe it should be a flyer, some pamphlets, or maybe I should just maybe try to do a book. I didn't even think about it as definite.
Mm-hmm.
But I began to collect them up and I began to rework them from a PowerPoint presentation to see how they looked. And I started putting them in a book form. And that's why they're called notes, these little note papers from the soft side. And instead of chapters, they're notes, because each one is a presentation that I gave. But I opened the book with information, like, what is self-esteem? And that's where I talk about, I'm here with an empty slate. And I opened it with a very long introduction that kind of said, you know, I wrote this book and loving yourself from the inside out as another added about, you know, and then I started the notes. And I was always, I'm going to do some more, because it's only, the first presentation I ever did was called Steps to the Softer Side, how to enter a softer, more loving relationship with yourself. And there was 9 of them, 9 or 12 or something like that. And I didn't put all of them in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, you know, drop the hostility, get over the past, a little something about love, like stay out of the man haters club. And I used I think there's 8 in here, 8 mm-hmm. in the notes. And I said, let me put these presentations together. I think one time somebody asked me, could they take my PowerPoint? Have a copy of my PowerPoint presentation.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not real territorial about stuff like that. You know, it doesn't bother me. Hey, if you take my stuff and you say you wrote it, that doesn't mean you wrote it.
Right, so, right, right.
So right, somebody asked me once, and I said, well, maybe I should put some together. So I started working on it at the end of 2014. I think I was laid off. And I started and didn't get finished and published until 2017.
Wow.
And I kept changing what I wanted it to look like. I kept adding, like at the end, I start adding the steps, how to do something. Like the one note is on finding your wings. At the end of the chapter, I list ways to, steps to follow. If you want to begin to do something that you've been putting off.
Okay, well, on that note, we're going to go to our next guest. Okay. But I really need you guys to stick around because Renee's giving away a copy of her book, but you have to stay to the end to get it. Okay. So I want to introduce our next guest, who is Marlise Lisi Bennett. And I just have to say, I've been knowing this young lady. I also know Renee. I've been knowing Renee forever, too. So, but I've known Lisi longer than I've known Renee. And when I met Lisi, she was probably a teenager or not too far from it.
I think and 21.
I have never ever in my life called her Lisi until today. I, as long as I've known her, I've never known her middle name. Her nickname was Lisi. Yes. But anyway, she's been a part of my life and family forever. And she's going to share with us, well, you know, I don't have her bio, but I do want to say that she is the author of Making Sense in Self-Care, Healing Beneath Layers. And she's going to share with us the health benefits of essential oils and how they can take care of our mental health or help us with our mental health. And so I just wanted to, again, thank you so much for joining us. And the very first question I have for you is, can you tell us, tell the audience what aromatherapy is and why you became an advocate for it?
Well, in a nutshell, aromatherapy is the method using scents to heal the mind, body, and soul. That's my own definition. But when you look up aromatherapy, it ends up coming up in the definition of essential oils. Okay. So I primarily just try to keep it simple. Aromatherapy primarily is a form or a method in which you use essential oils or scents to change your immediate environment.
Marlisa,
yeah.
I just met you. Do I get to say
Lisi?
I don't know.
Lisi is fine. Yes. Is Lisi? I'm sorry.
I was just asking you to pronounce it to make sure I said it right.
Yeah, Lisi.
Lisi, got it. Okay, thanks, Lisi. So, Lisi, just as a novice, such as myself, not knowing much about aromatherapy at all, where would one start, and is it expensive?
Well, to get started, primarily, no, it's not difficult to get into. I would like to back up and say, I discovered aromatherapy, or should I say stumbled upon aromatherapy, very early on in life, probably kindergarten, and didn't understand that that was aromatherapy. So early on in life, I suffered a very traumatic experience. And my only reprieve was walking to school past the bushel of honeysuckle. And I can tell you that I look forward to that walk to school because I smelled the honeysuckle. Wow. And it changed my whole essence of being affected by trauma and anxious and worried about what's going to happen next. And I only realized that I've been involved with aromatherapy for all that time just recently when I started journaling. And journaling became a part of another method of healing instead of lashing out at people, not understanding why I had that chip on my shoulder, so to speak. Aromatherapy I stumbled upon very early on. It's not expensive. And the reason why I say that is because anything that promotes well-being is worth the investment.
Right.
Okay. So it's a matter of how you think about what you're, how you're spending money or how you're doing something, you know. So I just have a quick follow-up question that, unfortunately, I've lost my sense of smell. You can tell I'm nasally now. I live with allergies, unfortunately, right? And I don't hear the sense of smell. So would aromatherapy be for someone like me who I don't have that sense of smell anymore? Well, I like to say it's temporary. I don't have it right now.
Gotcha. Well, when we think of aromatherapy, we only think of the aroma part of the therapy. But when you use essential oils, it is a form of healing where you can use it topical. It's good for pain relief, just a stress relief, a mood lifter. Sometimes you just want to take a break and change the way you feel because of a long day at work. Sometimes it's best to use it a couple drops in your bath water, and that opens up the senses, the sinuses, because I also suffer from a lot of allergies. And I didn't think it would work for me, but I found out that that is not the truth. It was highly effective when you use it in a diffuser, and it changes the aroma in your room or your work environment when it's highly stressful. So usually when you can't smell something, another of our senses becomes even more keen. So the taste will, in fact, take over what you can't smell. And a lot of us don't recognize it. So I'm learning as I go in my journey of self-care using essential oils that it's a multi-layered, highly beneficial, inexpensive, or worth the investment way to take care of yourself opposed to taking prescription medications. And that's another journey that I had ended because it wasn't working.
Thank you.
Good stuff.
That is very true.
So if a primary care physician, a PCP, disagrees with the use of aromatherapy, how can we as patients advocate? What language could we use to advocate for the use of the scents in our self-care?
Well, one of the examples I use when I have a naysayer, for instance, would be like our everyday products. If we would think of it in the sense that we actually use it to uplift or clean or better our space and our well-being, come on, like Pledge, furniture polish. Of course, we want the furniture to be polished, but that aroma from it is a dual effect. And we don't even look at it in regard because we're just worried about what it looks like. But how does it make us feel? Fix vapor rub, for instance, is another form of aromatherapy we never even think of. All of our soaps, our dishwashing liquid, laundry detergent, people who like incense, people who love perfume. All those things are a sense of aromatherapy for the upliftment of our environment. And we just don't look at it as aromatherapy. We just kind of put everything in a little box, not realizing that we've been practicing ancient wisdom in our everyday life and not realizing.
So how can we make this doctor know that, oh, yes, it is a good good for us to use aromatherapy? And they want us to take a pill instead, because I know that you talked about that in your book.
Most definitely.
They always want to give us pills instead of...
They see me coming and they don't really bother to debate, because my first thing to remind them is that when I use essential oils, it takes about 5 minutes. But when you give me this prescription, it takes me up to 6 months and I still need an adjustment, and then it doesn't work. And then you need another pill for another pill for another pill, and it just doesn't work. So who can argue if the fact that it takes all but 5 minutes, literally all but 5 minutes, to change the way your environment is causing stress? And we already know that stress is one of the culprits of poor health,
yeah.
mental health. Mm-hmm. So they are now beginning to use essential oils in many practices, like the massage therapist, mm-hmm. foot massagers, chiropractors, because a lot of people who have been physically or sexually assaulted have that barrier. So they mm-hmm. use the oil to relax the patient so that they can actually get to the root of the problem. So more and more they're using essential oils, aromatherapy, so that it better serves what their purpose is for their appointment, basically is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good. So mm-hmm. now the final question we have for you is, on chapter 8 of your book, here's okay. our book, Making Sense in Self-Care, yes. Healing. Look, she got it up too.
I got it. Chapter 8, I'm getting there.
Treating My Anxiety Beneath the Layers.
Yeah.
So I didn't find a passage to read. I just thought I'd ask you to just give us a little overview of what that chapter is about, because I think it's very important. You kind of alluded to it anyway, that, you know, the purpose of the oils and all of that.
Right, right. Well, unfortunately, I wasn't ready for this part of the questioning for the chapter 8.
I'm sorry.
But I'm just going to look at it quickly and say, in summary, in all of my years of trying to heal myself, which I didn't know that's what I was doing, mm-hmm. Or trying to find something to calm my angst, it started with performance anxiety at work. Oh, maybe about 20 years ago, when, you know, you get a promotion and then you're on probation to see how well you do. And I'm it's repetitive, anxious feeling of doom, like frozen in one spot. I thought, oh, let me go ahead and just get that medication they gave me. If I take it for a week, I'll be okay and I get past that cycle. And more and more I learned, it just really wasn't working for me. So what I began to understand is that in order to treat anything, you have to start from the inside out.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what essential oils actually does for me and a lot of other people I talk to. One essential oil I may take for just to calm my nerves, when in fact it's actually treating other ailments that I don't even know I have. Insomnia, for instance, sleep apnea, loss of appetite. And all of those things become the norm when you're highly anxious. Mm-hmm. So when I started to journal or to begin to pay closer attention, what triggered my anxiety is when I knew that it was deeper than just taking a pill. You know, it's your environment. It's the people you're around.
Right.
It's the constant stress of doing and not being. Or the mere fact that your childhood trauma that followed you that you never healed from. You know, eventually it catches up with you if you never heal from it. You just can't keep putting a Band-Aid on a sore that begins to grow and fester. You need a bigger bandage and then a bigger, I mean, it's just a ridiculous, vicious cycle of trying to fix something with a pill. Primarily treating my anxiety became more than just, I need to fulfill my prescription. I learned that my prescription started from the inside out. And I recognized that the aroma really changed my mind, my state of mind. Allows me to sleep better, allows me to function better. I have yet to even think about a prescription, let alone treating myself any other way than what works best for me. And it's ultimately healthier, more natural. And I like the fact that the product is primarily from the earth. It's anything that we need is already here and provided for.
Already here.
And so when we begin, or when we begin to notice that when we seek external help, we just continue to build the layer of walls that are hard to get through, when in fact we are already empowered. We already have what we need. We just need to know, be still and hear and be aware that what wasn't working, you know, so you have to do something different. And I'm happy to say that I talk about essential oils often. They probably think I'm crazy, but that's okay. I'm a happy, right. Healthy, crazy.
That's all right. I don't think it.
So, we certainly can say what you've talked about here. We could continue to talk about, I am in awe. I am learning. I really appreciate what you were sharing. Thank you so much for even talking about that. It, you know, from age 5, the honeysuckle bush and what that meant to you. That was so powerful.
Oh, my.
I know. I love
yes,
that.
I love that story. I know. That honeysuckle did it for me.
Yeah.
I remember that honeysuckle, too.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's like, I really look forward to walking to school every morning.
Wow.
But I didn't understand why until many years later.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Many years later. I thought, honeysuckle said.
It's amazing how it started you out on this whole journey of healing. And like, as you said, because everything we need is already in the earth. But really, listen to what you said, how it is impactful and useful. Stress, anxiety, sleep apnea, insomnia, and then it helps you to relax. Those are all so important. And the connection, I'm so glad that we had the two of you here together. Because today I see such a connection to self-esteem. And I think about the oils and I think about self-esteem and trying to heal from the inside, how I could use aromatherapy along with that. Because I like what you said, Renee. I need to be intentional. I like that word.
I like that word.
But with self-esteem, I need to be intentional and not wear a facade. Take off the mask.
Take off the mask
and be me, and also know that whether it's my complexion, my hair, my weight, whatever it is, I am worthy. None of that, that's not me. I am worthy, and my self-esteem comes from the inside. So I also like that you said, I'm going to close with this and turn it over to Roxanne for our closing, but our final closing. I like that you said, keep something for yourself.
Absolutely.
I like that. Yeah. Thank you so much, Zinette. Thank you so much, Marlise. And we're delighted to have you as guest on Chats with Roxanne and Randa.
Thanks for having us.
So grateful that I had this energy.
I don't know where this energy came from
because I've been like,
wow.
Pushing with these all day, but this feels really energizing.
Wow.
Yes. And in the interest of full disclosure, I want to say that Marlise and I know each other.
Yes, we do.
And I also went to school with her brother, but I'm not older.
Yes.
But I went to school with her mother.
But
you are correct. Yes. Hi, Miss Renee.
That is so funny. Wow. I'm just loving how this is all
full circle.
Organically taken form.
Yes.
But we you guys are talking about closings, and I didn't get a chance to ask Marlise her final question.
That's okay.
Her final question is the same final question I asked Renee. What inspired you to write your book?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, the inspiration came primarily from watching my immediate family take countless prescription medications and not see much improvement. I really felt that I needed to find an alternative, more natural way to help. It's heartbreaking to see your loved ones suffer from illness and take countless medications and still see minimum improvement. But prior to that statement, I wanted to say, as a mother, I had taken some prescription medication for anxiety. But then again, I on that roller coaster, okay, this is not working for me. I need to tweak it. I'm done with it. And I did not know it was still in my system when my youngest daughter was conceived. And she was born with a born without a muscle in her eye, so she doesn't have the peripheral vision.
Okay.
And her doctor at the time told me it was because it was either from a sedative I had been taking or some products I used in the environment while I was carrying her. So that was another reason why I was inspired to write the book. Like, listen, we do things over and over because we learn behavior. But had I known that, even though I had stopped taking the medication for at least a month before I knew I was pregnant, and it was still in my system, you know, I would have probably refused the medication altogether. Mm-hmm. Because it's the disorder that she has is called Duane syndrome. There's three types that she fortunately has the least severe. But it's not anything that can be repaired. Mm-hmm. So that's the other inspiration for writing my book, to let people know there are so many other ways to care for ourselves. We don't have to take the pill. We don't have to. You know, there are some people who need it for life-sustaining purposes, but for anxiety, PTSD, we can do better. We can do different.
Okay. Yeah, I can't wait to get your book.
Thank you. Thank you so much, yes. Ladies. So we're really going to close in a minute here, but one of the things I'd like to say is let the self-care and healing begin.
Yes.
Okay, everybody. We want the self-care and the healing to begin now. Yes. And we want you to join us next week for our topic, Healthy Relationships. There is such a thing. We have two couples who are living in a healthy relationship. That's Elder George and Linda Fleming, and mm-hmm. Pastor Mac and Tameta and Mrs. Tameta Gray. So that's going to be a lively, you'll enjoy listening to these healthy couples. So but both of the ladies have agreed to give us, or give you guys a copy of their book.
Yeah.
So the way for you to get that is to send an email to info@warheals.org, and that's WAARHEALS.org. And we will have a drawing. We have our drawings on the last Thursday of the month, because we also have a panel discussion on the last Thursday. We have three podcasts and then a final panel discussion. So the last Thursday of the month at midnight, I will be drawing winners for all the giveaways that we have collected. Awesome. And there was one more thing I wanted to say. Oh man, how did it just leave my brain?
Can I just say?
Oh, I know what it is. I need to know where can people find you guys? What's your social media networks, or if you have any? Renee?
Well, I want to give you that. But, you know, I've been doing these motivational moments.
Okay.
And I wrote something that just happened to have wrote it as one of the first ones that is so appropriate for today. I would love to read it. It's really short.
Read it.
You know, it's just that it's so appropriate. If it wasn't so appropriate, I wouldn't say, "Oh, can I read my thing?"
Well, family, this is not a rigid environment. We're having a good time and just read it.
This is called The Skin You're In.
Yeah.
Love the skin you're in. There's more to that saying than meets the eye. Loving the skin you're in means loving yourself from the inside out. And that is the beginning of comprehending the depth and breadth of the love God has for us, and of seeing ourselves as worthy of the best that life can bring. It means respecting yourself so others can see that you command respect.
Yes.
It means that your heart is open to receiving love, and you have the capacity to give love. Learning to love the skin we are in is the healthiest thing we can do for ourselves. learning to love, honor, respect the gifted woman that God created you to be. Beautiful skin you are in will set the stage for your destiny and lead you to the future God has planned for you. Are you loving the skin that you're in? That was my...
Did you say you wrote that?
Yeah, I wrote that.
Oh, that's... I love it.
Absolutely beautiful.
That was wonderful. Good. Yes.
Thank you. I'm trying to learn how to be less, I'm very wordy, as you can tell. And my writing reflects it a lot. And the woman I wrote this for said, it's a little too long, our readers won't read it. So I was able to condense it to under 200 words. So I thought it was so good for this beautiful evening that we've had.
I agree with you.
Yes.
Perfect.
Absolutely.
And you know what? We have to be intentional to love the skin we're in.
We have to.
All right.
leaving your destiny to chance, and chances are it won't happen.
Right.
You can't leave this stuff to chance. So I appreciate that. My email is thesofterside303@gmail.com. I have my business one, but I'll leave that. I'm on Facebook, Renee Aldridge. There's the Softer Side Facebook page. I am on Twitter, but unfortunately, I don't know what that is. I think it's @ReneeSofter. Three.
Well, obviously, she doesn't use Twitter that much.
I do use it. It's just such a stupid name.
I don't use mine.
Instagram, Renee Bougie. And I didn't think that I was really going to be an Instagram person when I came up with that name. I don't really like it. But that's it. Renee, thesofterside303@gmail.com. That's the easiest. Okay. My Facebook, Softer Side Seminars.
Okay.
And
keep us posted when you have your next event. Okay, Lisi?
Yes, I am not that much out there as of yet. I'm still doing a lot of journal, but I did start a business page on Facebook, ironically calling it Making Sense in Self-Care, where I advertise my book, which it can be found at iamlisig.com. And G is for my maiden name, Grant. And the purpose of using my maiden name is because I am starting from the beginning of my love of aromatherapy. So I am LisiG.com.
All righty now. I love it. Oh, wow. Thank you, ladies. I am so excited to have you guys, or we are excited that you were our very first podcast guest.
Yes.
This is a journey. So I do intend to have you guys back at some time in the future. Maybe on a panel discussion or whatever. So we'll talk about that, because this is a topic that needs to be addressed again. I don't know if we're going to do it annually or whatever, but we'll be in touch with you guys. So.
Great.
So I just want to, again, thank you for listening. And we want you to remember, Rhonda and I want you to remember that we got your back.
There are two things we would like you to do. Number one, enter our monthly drawing by sending your email address to info@warheals.org. Spelled out, that is info@warheals.org. Put drawing in the subject line. We will notify the winner or winners via email by midnight on the last Thursday of each month. Our second request, engage with us on IG. Follow, like, and subscribe to all of our social media platforms at @WarHeals_ on IG, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. @WarHeals_ on IG, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. As always, we thank you for listening and see you next week.